Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. Hey, Plant Cunning Podcast, we've got Rebecca Beyer back on the show. She's an amazing person. I think you're going to love this episode. Before we get into it, I just want to make sure you know about the Plant Cunning Conference, July 26th, 27th, and 28th at our small farm in central New York. Rebecca Beyer will be speaking there, as will Sevensong, Michael Bryan, Zamboni Funk, and Pam Montgomery is going to be doing a keynote. Pam Montgomery is also doing a class real soon. It's a seven-month online program called Co-Creative Partnership with Nature. You can find her website at wakeuptonature.com. Check that out and make sure to get your tickets for the Plant Cunning Conference at plantcunningconference.com. Okay, also, I'm still doing Jyotish readings, Vedic astrology readings, so hit me up at info@plantcunning.com if you'd like to get a Vedic astrology reading. Okay, let's get to it. Rebecca Beyer. Okay, so today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we have Rebecca Beyer returning from Blood and Spice Bush. So how are you today, Rebecca?
I am wonderful today, post-equinox. How are y'all doing?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Really, really good. We're getting one last little hit of winter here with a snow blizzard, and I'm here for it. I feel like winter was, I didn't even go snowboarding at all this year, so I feel like it was a really unseasonably warm and happy to get some more snow.
We hardly had any snow this winter also. I'm happy y'all getting a little bit.
Yeah.
So how's your year been? What have you been up to this year?
Oh my gosh, it's been really busy. So I just finished building. When I first talked to you, we were kind of a half a year into the build on our house. And while my partner and I that were building that house have separated, we're still in deep community and love for each other and are building new structures in our land. We have five people living there now at Lindera Community in Marshall, North Carolina. And I moved into my house last week and it has no siding and no running water, but
you don't need that.
We had a beautiful equinox meal with our new wood stove and it's been really special. I just submitted a third book manuscript, which I'm not supposed to talk about yet, but I will shortly send you info on.
Nice. Cool. Awesome.
Sending y'all copies of that. And tattooing a ton. Very busy. Very busy, but a lot of good stuff. And just about to jump into my teaching season on March 31st. I started an advanced program for my Hedgecraft program that is in its 9th or 10th year this year. I cannot.
My goodness. Okay, cool. That's a long time. Yeah.
So is that an advanced, like, for the program for people who have already, like, completed things?
Yeah. I have had so many students have become dear friends and community members that I keep in touch with and I'm able to see often. And we're saying, can we please, you know, figure something out so we can come do some more with you? I have some people take the program multiple times. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'll sit down and actually make an advanced program. And I'm very excited about it. It's been really fun to work on.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, I'm actually interested, like, how you got started in that, in the Hedgecraft in the first place. Like, how did you, like, because you're pretty young now, and you've been doing that for a while.
I appreciate you saying that. I was born in 1987, so I'm, like, medium speed young, you know?
Okay. Same.
You're very, oh, hell yeah. You look young. People are always like, girl, are you 40? I'm like, no.
Almost.
I'm 36. Yeah, exactly. So I got started on Hedgecraft. Interestingly enough, I've been practicing witchcraft since I was 12, like formally, because I grew up in the Unitarian Universalist Church. And I talked to y'all a little bit about that last time. Yeah. I had a mentor in my church who was Wiccan, and that was my gateway drug to historical witchcraft, which led me more into occult herbalism. Mm. And Hedgecraft to me was a term I first came to from reading the blog called The Witch of Forest Grove by Sarah Ann Lawless back in the 2009, 2010s. And she talked about the word Hedgecraft and how it actually had been coined by, like, a 70s fantasy author.
Interesting.
I know. I thought it was an ancient term, but it's really not. And she wrote this really thoughtful piece about that. And I was like, I just love that. that term. And so I was at the time teaching a lot of classes about earth skills like basket making and spoon carving, foraging, and then traditional witchcraft, which is a historical early modern European based revival form of modern witchcraft. This is Wicca, which is a separate branch, equally valid. And I was like, how do I combine? Like I would go to earth skills gatherings and everybody was doing appropriative Native American imitations of spirituality. And I was like, we actually, as European ancestored people, have really cool, semi-intact animist traditions, and we could combine those and do the earth skills, do the herbal work and the foraging, combine it with the traditional craft and with honoring current native histories on this land. And that's what Hedgecraft kind of was born to me as. It was like, I wished desperately to be part of, as many of us I'm sure do, a non-broken lineage of plant work that is not harmful to the global majority, you know, and to our friends who are Black and Brown and Indigenous. So, yeah, I think Hedgecraft was my answer to that. And while I've had students of every age, race, gender identity, and it's grounded in Appalachian folk magic because I live in Appalachia and the history of this land where we live now, to me, Hedgecraft was like old world magic combined with, you know, new world ecological theory to yield a living spirituality. So sorry, that was super long-winded.
No, that's great.
But that's been my goal all this time, is to
Okay,
try to
cool.
develop this.
I think that's a great word too for it, because it is, it was coined in the 70s, right? But
I think so, yeah.
it has so much power to it, and it makes sense as a way of combining those things and creating something new out of these old strands. And I think that impulse is very important and needed now. And it's what we need. Because there is so much beautiful knowledge and lore and so many practices that are still present or are easily found again.
Yeah.
And it's good to have like a container for them too. We
That's well said.
like people talk crap on the permaculture, and I understand the reasons for that too, but in a way it's like a bundling and packaging all of these ancient and most a lot of indigenous knowledges and repackaging it, but it gives a hook to hang all that knowledge and skill and I like those themes on.
Definitely. And wild tending, you know, I think about permaculture and some of the conversations that are happening right now around that word. And, you know, I do a lot of writing, and especially in the past, have done a lot of examination of cultural appropriation from like, when is, you know, obviously no one is saying nobody should share culture. That's not ever been the conversation. I think people of certain leanings will try to throw that argument out by saying, you just don't want to share anything, and that's not really. It's like, no one's saying that. It's who's making money off of it. What is the historical population of the people you're profiting off of? Is relation to you in power? And I think the permaculture, one thing I used to teach permaculture classes and work for a PDC program, and a lot of us are now shifting to talking about traditional ecological knowledge. And that word, I love it so much. And there's that beautiful book, Tending the Wild, by what is her name? Kat. I can't remember who. I'm having a brain fart, but beautiful book, Tending the Wild, hugely transformative for my plant practice. Yeah, and I think you're right. Like creating a container for like what's one word like wild tending or traditional ecological knowledge that we can use to talk about more, you know, zoomed in actions in our plant practice.
Yeah, I think Hedgecraft is a good word for what you're doing. So what do people learn in the first level Hedgecraft, and what are you expanding for the advanced students?
That's a great question. The first class, so the point of the class for me is I want folks to be able to go outside their front door and be like, my kid has a cold. What do I do? It's very simple, safe, easy home remedies, mostly from non-native plants. And then not only teaching someone how do you make a tea, but of, dead nettle for allergies, like our tincture of ale hoof or glaucoma heterosa for sinus infection. But what's the lore of this plant? What's the history of it? How did it get here? And in our folk American practice of medicine, especially Appalachian folk medicine, I feel like it's really healing, no matter what your racial background is, to learn that history if you live on this land, because it helps you feel connected. If you have African heritage, ground ivy is from the Germanic lands. Also, it has a history in use in Black American folk medicine. So there's a gateway there for connection. And for me, I'm a nerd for plant history. I'm not a clinical herbalist. I don't see clients. I do provide medicine to clinics in my area, but I'm not a clinical herbalist. I'm a plant ethnobotanist and folklorist and nerd for that stuff. So I try to provide that a grounded access point for safe plant identification without a botany background for the layperson. My hope is that my students could be illiterate and that they would still safely be able to identify plants, that they feel like they understand the history and the meaning of the plant.
Yeah,
Cool.
cool.
So important.
Oh, sorry, please.
So important to have that foundation. Yeah, like the history and being able to safely identify it. That's crucial as well.
So, what do the advanced students get to learn?
So advanced, a lot of my students are like they could co-teach with me at this point. Some of them studied 5 or 6 years ago and have continued to learn a lot. So teaching them, we also do crafts and medicine making projects together. We plant things. I'll be doing more like a historically advanced occult work with them and, historical spells. Like we learn spells from like England or make, Sator Rotas squares, which were used in Appalachian folk magic as well, which are little paper, like number squares. You roll them up, you hide them in your house to protect your home. We usually focus on like protective magics, poisonous plants, and like topics where we go deep. So they'll go deeper into some of the ones I didn't get to really go over with them in the first year program. And also plant ID. So this first class, I'm taking them to a part of the national forest where the spring ephemerals are incredibly in display. It's absolutely incredible. So I'm hoping to show them some of the more rare native plants and how do we ID them. And we'll go deeper without me having to kind of review the basics of, chickweed if we see that while we're out, So yeah.
So what are some of those spring ephemerals? Are they already popping up for you?
I just scouted the spot like 2 or 3 days ago, and I wish I could show you this video. I took the entire carpet of the forest entrance to this trailhead is covered in bloodroot, thousands and thousands of flowers, and the wood anemone is coming up. The pawpaws are getting ready to bud, which was like a little concerning.
That's early.
I know. I was like, don't come out yet, y'all. The spice bush bushes are flowering, which, as you know, I love spice bush. No surprise. Very on brand for me. Oh my gosh. And just some things like that. And soon there'll be the geraniums will be coming up. And it's just absolutely, there's nothing better than Appalachian spring, in my opinion.
Yeah, I know. It's such a magical time of year. We get some of the, we're still in like the very northern part of the Appalachians. And I'm very excited for that. We're getting to see like a few plants coming up, like the chickweed and cleavers and nettle and things like that. But we get tons of trout lily and trillium and dwarf ginseng and
We do have skunk cabbage
oh, lots of
Oh
skunk
yeah, we don't
popping
have
up.
that. I learned
Really?
that once in Vermont. Yeah, we don't really have skunk cabbage down here often. I think maybe in the higher elevations, but I almost never see it.
It's really abundant right here where we are. There's a lot of moist areas, and they're just so
They're
funny.
so cool looking. They're like these little like dinosaur beaks coming out of the ground when they're young, They're
Do
just
y'all
amazing.
use them for medicine?
I haven't really myself, but during COVID, actually, herbalists were talking about using it for lung infections, and it's like very cooling. And it's interesting because the inner part of that, of the like leaf that the little beak that comes out, it looks like it has like this flower with all these pollen dots on the inside, and it looks like a COVID virus. Like it looks like a kind of like a cartoon drawing of a COVID virus where it has, all the
Spadix?
little,
Spadix?
spadix, or I'm not sure what they're
Spadix.
called, but yeah. So it's interesting, like see observing it in the spring and seeing that like even look like the COVID virus, like you know how that can happen with plants,
Doctrine
the
of
doctrine of
signature,
signatures and
signature.
such. Yeah, so that's how I've heard it being used, but I don't know. I haven't actually explored that myself, but it's such a beautiful plant, and I love that it's abundant in our like swampy field.
That's amazing. That's a
Yeah.
special plant. I haven't gotten to hang out with a lot of the swampy guys unless I go down to New Orleans.
Oh, then you got even way different plants down there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely. Yeah, the Gulf plants.
Yeah,
Yeah.
those, it's so cool how each, well, there's so much diversity in the ecosystems in the US, and like you go to Florida or you go to New Orleans or you go to Southwest. It's very, everything's just so different.
Yeah.
There's
No,
some.
I'm happy to live in a place that I'll never know all the plants of, because there's 4,000 different plant species in my flesh. I'm like, great. I'll just never know them all. I'll let go
Yeah.
of that attachment.
Nice to have some mystery, you know?
Yeah. Seriously, I'm always like, how, what is this? I see it all the time. Oh, man.
Yeah.
And those, the Southern Appalachians in particular are really powerful. A lot of different. Up here, we're like a little bit more, there's not quite as much diversity up here, but it's still, I'm still learning new plants all the time.
Same. It's so
And with
great.
that, So one other thing that's new with you too since the last time we spoke is your new book came out, Mountain Magic. I'm pretty sure that was not out yet. We talked a little bit about wild witchcraft. So do you want to tell us a little bit about Mountain Magic and maybe what are some of the differences between the two books?
Thank you for asking. Yeah, so Mountain Magic is my specific to Appalachia book. It's Quarto Publishing approached me and asked if I would do a Appalachian folk magic book as part of a series with an indigenous magic book and a black folk magic book. And I actually don't think either of the other books are out. So I don't know if it's going to be part of a series. I hope so. I would like to read those books. But it is just about Appalachian folk magic. It has a section on herbs, but it's kind of like there's a lot of interest in Appalachian folk magic. I actually think I found my first AI written Appalachian witchcraft book, which is very scary, on Amazon.
Oh my goodness.
I was looking through it to see if it plagiarized my books or one of my mentors, Byron Ballard's book. She's written a lot of books on Appalachian folk magic and is from, this part of where I live, like historically. But this book, Mountain Magic, really just goes into the history of the land, what are the different types of magical practitioners, and it has an herbal section and a charms and weather lore and planting by the signs section.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
Very sweet.
Yeah, I like the, talking about all the different kinds of like the Yarb doctors, the water witches, like there's all these different specialties of folks.
I
And
think that's one of the coolest things about Appalachian folk magic is the specializing.
yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. People have different skills and abilities and different like
Interests.
talents lie, in different family lines too. Like I grew up in northern Appalachia, and like my grandfather's from West Virginia, and even up here, the water witching is still like my grandfather knew how to water witch, and he like would do that when he was building a new house to find where the water was going. And then our friend down the road, he's he grew up in this area up in central New York, and he also water witches like to find where like the spring is underground and sets up a well there, and it's like wow. It's still and they call it witching.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And I always love water witching because, in modern new age witchy fashion, I feel like men can feel like, am I allowed in this space? Like, is magic for me? And it's interesting in Appalachian folklore, men are believed to be naturally more gifted or naturally born talented at water witching,
That's
especially
interesting.
if they're the seventh son of a seventh son or born on Christmas Day. So I think
Ooh.
that's, I thought that was kind of sweet because it's like, it's a, I don't know, there's a lot of duality in Appalachian folk magic that isn't necessarily like magic's not just for any one gender, it's for everybody. And different people of all expressions are good at that magic. But I don't know, I love that about it. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in historically, magic was definitely not limited to one gender. I wonder why that is the case now. Is it be, do you think it's because like men are supposed to be rational? Like I hear that too in astrology. Like it's like men don't, it's just for girls. Us men don't, we don't believe in astrology.
Well, if anybody wants to get a girlfriend, they just really need to study astrology in Asheville and you'll be all set. So they're really limiting themselves to their love connections. Anyway, I think my theory, and I learned this from Byron when I was taking a class with her when I first met her in 2020 in 2014, and she was saying magic is a tool of the oppressed. So class, one thing I'm sad to see as a 36-year-old, far leftist, is that we are kind of like stopping to have as much class discourse in a lot of conversations about very complicated, like we're losing the intersectionality of class. And I think that is why a lot of poor people practice magic of all races and genders. And I would look at class before gender when it comes to magic, right? But with Appalachian folk magic, I think, and with the current, witchcraft revival in the 70s, women were still not able to have a bank account,
Yeah,
or had to be
totally.
married in the 70s in America, but you could practice witchcraft.
Yeah.
So, and also, I think that, empowerment movements with women's rights, the civil rights movement, and a lot of other things, we see big resurgences in like feminist Dianic Wicca, in Black hoodoo and voodoo traditions in the South amongst Black communities, re-empowerment and reclaiming of these lineages in spaces of poverty and disempowerment. And while today, I think a lot of people of every walk practice magic, forgetting to do like a class analysis when asking like why are these people practicing magic, I think is so important and interesting to examine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that may also be why magic is having such a resurgence now, is partially because it seems like the United States global hegemony is collapsing, and people in general in the US are doing a lot worse than they were 30 years ago. So it's like, then it's like, now what do we do now? Go to magic.
Yeah, that makes
I
sense.
definitely do magic every day in my tattoo practice. I'm like, give me a tip. Like I do a money candle every day because my coworker has a business called Calamus and Honey, which is a hoodoo business, and we have all the products in the store, so I just use them. And
Nice.
they really do work. If I forget to do
Calamus
my
and
money candle,
honey.
yeah, Calamus and Honey, Baylen Lavoie, and
Cool.
Jonathan Oates' business in Asheville is very wonderful. I would say I've never had, when I actually take the time to light the candle, do the money drawing ritual, it really freaking changes my day. And it's really nice.
I love that. Yeah.
That's another one of my favorite, the swampy plants.
That's a plant I have not met much. I was hanging out with Jim McDonald at the IHS, the International Herb Symposium, last June. And it's the first time I've ever gotten to meet him in person. And I loved him so much. We were laughing. And he's so pleasant. He's a deeply
Yes.
pleasant person. And I went on his plant walk and he came on mine, which was very anxiety inducing for me. I'm like, hi, I'm not a clinical herbalist. I've read all these people's books and websites my whole life. I'm just like, hey, I don't know why I'm here, but great. But he showed us Calamus and he loves Calamus so much. And it's so important to his personal practice. It was hard not to instantly fall in love as he showed us the plant on the walk in this little swampy area. And it was extremely special in Boston.
It's
Cool.
another one of those plants that reminds me of an alien.
Yeah,
Like the
definitely.
actual rhizome, it's like a creature.
Has a whole personality.
Yeah, that's what I
Maybe
think.
you could make an Alrun or a Mandrake charm with a Calamus root for your
Ooh.
bioregionally accurate hedgecraft,
Love
practice.
that. That's true.
If you have Calamus growing, I'd like to grow it at our place. I think it'd be really nice.
It's not hard to grow.
Oh,
It's pretty
good.
useful. Just need some moisture. That's fine.
Got lots of that for sure.
Cool. Sweet.
So when you're writing books, your books,
Yeah.
what is your research project like process
Process,
like?
yeah.
'Cause I know that's a big part. I mean, being a plant nerd, you like books,
Yeah, how do you do the research and how do you decide like what makes the cut to include in a book,
That's a really good question. No one's ever asked me that. So my first book, Wild Witchcraft, is kind of like a beginner's guide to gardening and foraging and historical magical plant lore to it's like giving a peek into my own brain of how I organize things. So it's a kind of a good way to look. I use Google Docs and binders for everything. When 2016, I started typing up all my notes from years of classes and reading books, and I organized it all into Google Docs. And so what I do is I have an Appalachian folk medicine Google Doc, I have like a European witchcraft plants Google Doc with like belladonna and, all those non-native plants. And then I have just the American ethnobotany giant Google Doc. And what I'll do is, like, right now as I'm working on a book, to organize my citations, because my bibliography is like 12 pages long, I will immediately, copy and paste from my Google Doc into my document I'm writing, write it, cite it with that bit, so I don't mess up my citations and I'm keeping everything accurate and tidy. That's what works for me. But it is definitely like, I've shown people my Google Drive and they're like, "You're insane."
So you have to take notes? You're supposed to take notes when you're reading books?
I have, so I've never been diagnosed with ADHD or anything. I've always been very good at school and very bad at like socializing and like understanding. I've learned how to do it better in my old age, but as a young person, I was very weird. I was selfish, self-centered. I didn't ask people how they were. I didn't make eye contact. Like, I really struggled with that. I was really good at photographically memorizing text and really good at, recite. If I read poetry, I could recite it right away. It's definitely faded, but I have like a somewhat photographic memory. And I'm really sad that I damaged it with excessive drinking in my 20s, but what can you do? And but that has really helped me with my book writing because I can remember where information is in my drive and get to it quickly.
That's really cool.
Yeah, but I try to organize it so that as that ability continues to fade with my mental acuity, I'm able to find that information with my search bar. So,
Right. Yeah, that's really helpful.
yeah, my one superpower is memorizing text.
That's great.
It's a helpful one to have if you're a writer, especially.
Yes, for sure.
We
But
have a
it's not
friend.
great when I can't remember what I have to do tomorrow. So,
I'm inspired that you also just like decided to organize all your notes, and like I have just like binders and so many notes, and I have like different hard drives with notes from different classes and things. So I really need to do some like sit down and organize everything in one place just to be able to like go back through it in a cohesive way or for future writing projects. Yeah, so I'm interested in how you do it. That's a good tip to just like take the time to write up your notes, put it into Google Drive or whatever, to be able to search it on the computer. And then as you're writing, just immediately cite it so that you don't forget.
Yeah, I learned my lesson on wild witchcraft because I was like, oh, I'll cite it. Like, I'll format my bibliography after. It took me 4 days of 12-hour days to fix my bibliography because it was such a mess. And my nightmare is to write something and cite it improperly and misrepresent something, especially if I'm citing information about indigenous plant uses or black plant uses and am incorrectly representing information that's really sensitive and important. So, yeah, so I was like, I'm never doing this again. So, for this book project and for the Mountain Magic book, I immediately cited everything as I went versus doing it afterwards.
Perfect.
Oh
And
my
then,
gosh.
as far as your research goes, what are some of the books that are in your bibliography, or what are some of your favorite books that have influenced Mountain Magic or Wild Witchcraft?
Yeah, I mean, Frank C. Brown's collection of North Carolina folklore,
Mm.
Every Day. It's a veritable grimoire. Like, I can't recommend these books enough. They,
Hmm.
of course, use antiquated language, so trigger warning. They definitely say some whack stuff. And you have to, like, they're written in the 30s. You have to know that going in,
Right.
and be responsible with how you cite and repeat that information in a public space. But that book, and I use The Dictionary of Plant Lore by D.C. Watts constantly. It's unfortunately very expensive, but I found a used copy for like $50 and I saved it.
Awesome.
Those two books I use all the time. I also love the book Witchcraft Medicine, which is by three different authors and it's translated from German. Highly recommend it for the more occult side of herb lore. And it's beautifully written. It's just a pleasure to read.
Very cool.
Well, what about new books that have come out recently that you're excited about in this area?
Genre.
Yeah. Well, I've been trying, so because I teach Appalachian folk medicine to, a diverse audience, I'm really trying recently to learn African folk medicine and magic in my region. I just took an incredible tour in Savannah, Georgia, with a private tour guide with Day Clean Tours. I think it's called Day Clean Soul, or I can give you a link to it. It was honestly the best tour I've ever been on about the African history of Savannah. And he knew so much about plants. I was just like in heaven talking with him. What an amazing person. And I have been building my library, and I just got Lucretia Van Dyke's African American Herbalism book, which I've been loving. And that's a newer book that came out this past year.
Cool.
And I'm trying to think of what other. I have like so many old books. I like
Well,
don't often get new ones. Yeah.
old
Are
books
there
can
any
be
you're
cool to
loving?
read again. Well, so the Dan Shulkey's new book I thought was pretty fun.
Oh, the green. Oh, the one that came out. What's it called? Green Mysteries.
Green Mysteries, yeah.
Yeah, Daniel's
That's pretty fun.
awesome. I met him at Vera Destina a few years ago, and I was like very anxious to make eye contact with him.
Anxious to make eye contact with him, or like anxious to not make eye contact?
To not make eye contact. I was like, I emailed him after. I was like, sorry, I acted weird. He's like, it's fine. Yeah, he's very nice.
Happens.
I've written a little book for Three Hands Press called Fever Dreams, or Fever Tree, Appalachian Charms Against Fever during the pandemic. It was really fun to work
Cool.
with him. He's an excellent editor.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I haven't read the new book though. I haven't gotten a copy yet.
It's gorgeous, and the illustrations are gorgeous. And
A Veerling, I think, did it right.
yeah, it's very nice. But I've been studying Vedic astrology very intensely and just like ordering every book that my teacher mentions. So just all my new books have been like, Jataka Parijata and all those things.
You know,
So.
I will say a book I've been reading today, which hold on, I'll actually grab it for you. You're
Cool.
next to me. So this is for the witchier people. We've just passed the equinox, and the next day I love celebrating is Walpurgisnacht. Are you familiar with this holiday? It's the night
Somewhat.
before
This,
Beltane
right,
in the
yeah.
30s. So I've got this book, and it's not new, but it's Night of the Witches. It's just about Walpurgisnacht, and it
Oh,
has
cool.
food recipes, herbal lore. It's by Linda Reddich, and it's amazing. It's very well cited, and it has so many beautiful little crafts and herbal recipes, and it has an incredible bibliography. I love it. So I've been reading this today, and I'm loving it.
Cool.
Yeah,
Nice. we'll be
Yeah, it
going
has
over
to.
that for my class on the first advanced class.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
Yeah, I think, well, it seems as though like we have friends who are also writing books and like having to redo everything because they didn't cite correctly, and it's like just
Oh
annoying to do. It's really nice when things are cited well, and then you
no.
can,
Dive in deeper with
yeah, and then
yeah.
it's like one book then opens up all these other books, and then just like opens up, and then you have to get like a barn to put all your books in.
Oh yeah. I have a library at my tattoo shop because my books don't fit in my house. So
That's awesome. That's a great idea.
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to do now is like figure out where to put any more books.
Oh yeah, I just had to organize all mine too by topic, and I have to say the little weird, semi-autistic child that lives in my brain, that 11-year-old that can't make eye contact, loves my color-coordinated organized library, which
Nice.
my shop manager helped me do. I can't take credit for it because she's so much more organized than I am. But oh my gosh, I can find my books now when I'm like up.
Great.
I remember the part I need from this one book, but where is it? I'll never find the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually asked my ancestors to help me find books before.
Oh my gosh, that's
Because I
beautiful.
have my ancestor altar right there. Like with
Oh.
like, guys, I really need this book. I'm like, oh, right there.
Yeah,
But
we do Saint Anthony, Saint Anthony. You know that yes.
charm? Yeah.
Yes.
I
She
went
is
to high school in New
my
Jersey.
homie right there.
Oh yeah, a lot of people in New Jersey growing up in a strongly Italian Catholic high school, I had, moved from like a rural area in eighth grade to a really urban area. And I was like learning all these little things from my, they would wear the Il Corno, the little red coral horn. And a lot of my Italian friends actively did folk magic all the time in high school. And I was so fast. I loved it. I thought it was so special to get to witness that. So St. Anthony's one I've picked up myself.
And it's interesting how I was raised Catholic, and my family would do little folk magic things too, but would never call it folk magic or never think of it that way. But we'd be driving in the car, and I hear my Aunt Mary muttering under her breath, "Mother Mary, full of grace, help me find a parking space." And there it was, right up front, right where we needed it
I love that. I've never heard that one. I love that she gets
to
that.
be.
That's what magic is really all about. I think it's about life is hard. It's difficult and it's painful and it's dangerous. And, when we reach for a saint or for an herb or for something, it's because we're trying to find ease, That's really
Absolutely.
important.
And help.
So speaking of like charms and, practical uses of magic in the day-to-day, are there any specific charms that you want to highlight from mountain magic, that like the witch bottle or something like that, that you want to share with listeners for, day-to-day practical things that, people in Appalachia do?
Let me think. Well, we were talking about water witching. So it's not necessarily a charm, but some of the woods that are traditional to use for water witching vary from place to place. And I love telling people, you'd think witch hazel, you'd think willow, right? To make a dowsing rod or a dowsing wand. But in a lot of places near where I live in Western North Carolina and in the more deep south, people used peach wood
Ooh, interesting.
to douse with. And I love that little fact because the history of the peach in the South is fascinating, difficult, and sad. And it's special trees from China originally, and Persia. And knowing that it's associated with love and with this kind of the softer, I would say, if we're going to use gendered language, more feminine aspects of magic, it's also interesting to see that it's used for water witching, but only in this area and down into Alabama. So I've always thought that was really special. So I cut peach wood now to dry to use for water witching later in the year.
Ooh,
What other
very
woods
interesting.
do people use? Because I've heard of witch hazel as one of the main ones. I mean, isn't that why they call it witch hazel? Or there's the WYCH, and I've heard that. So that's different than like WITCH. Is that true?
That's the Middle English spelling,
Right.
witcha.
Okay. Witcha.
YCH, yeah, WYCHE. It's, it just means witch, but because there was no regulated spelling, it's one of the many
Okay.
ways to spell it. You're totally right. But witch hazel and American hazel are both used in water witching, as well as willow, all the plants that like to grow by water, if it makes sense.
Yeah, and hazel also has a lot of magical history.
Oh my gosh, right? That's like so
Yes.
many. And in Appalachia, we use hazelnuts at Samhain for divinations. And they used to have nutcrack nights, which is really interesting because people didn't celebrate Halloween because they're Baptists, largely in Protestants. But they would roast hazelnuts, and like, let's say y'all are a couple, you'd put your hazelnuts next to each other in a fire, and you'd watch how they roasted together. And if they hissed and spit and were like crackling a lot, you'd be like, "Ooh, we're gonna have a spicy relationship this year." But if they gently roasted and just were chill and calm, you'd be like, "We're gonna have a wonderful, understanding, nice relationship." So people would do these relationship divinations with hazelnuts and Appalachian folk magic in the fall.
That's awesome. I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, Nutcrack Night. It's really, I haven't
Nutcrack.
found a ton of references to it, but what I have found is like really sweet.
Wonder if they would do that also with the chestnuts back in the day, or
Yep. You could do a chestnut, a walnut, or a hazelnut.
Okay, cool.
You just name them. You'd be like, "This one is,
This guy.
you just name each one your name or your partner's name or your friend." People would do with their friends too.
One of the other charms I like is the Sator Rotas, because that also has a long history, and I still see it used in Appalachia as well. Like, so one of the spiritual traditions I belong to, Tat, was founded by a West Virginia mystic, and he had a Sator Rotas square, And then we still have it at the Tat Center down in North Carolina now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, with all the books that just that Tuorotas. And I mean, it's not even the group, it doesn't really do much magic stuff at all, but they still it's still there. It has it's prominently displayed. I don't It's like, oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah,
But
Sedarota squares, I think, come from the 3rd century, from, I believe,
yeah.
Egypt is where they're first recorded, but I'm sure they're much older. And they found them in the 1700s, balled up in the walls of Appalachian cabins. And I'm like,
Whoa.
to think about that connection, people are like, oh, Appalachians are all uneducated. And like, there's a lot, I don't need to tell anybody this, but there's so many stereotypes about Appalachian people and everything in between about them. They're both glorified and vilified, But I love finding these like occult connections with more what I would say high magic, as some would say in the occult world, spheres, like the magical squares and things, which were used a lot. And I believe they were brought by the Pennsylvania Dutch down because they were using books like The Long Lost Friend and things like that that used magical squares and ticket writing a lot, which you find in West Virginia, especially with the German population.
We speak a little bit about ticket writing for those who.
Oh yeah, a receipt or a ticket is a magical scribe on a piece of paper. It's usually a prayer written out, and it's like a petition. You're asking for something magically, and you get it from a power doctor or a yarb person or a charm doctor, whatever name you call your local magical practitioner in the mountains. And they would write it for you, usually bless it through the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost or Mother Mary, and then give it to you. And you would bury it or hide it in your house, dissolve it in water or burn it to activate it, essentially.
Oh, another one of those things that has survived so long in Appalachia that I find always fascinating as
Yes,
is
please tell me.
the astrology,
Yes.
like the most of the lore I've seen is from the Foxfire, but it's really detailed and it's Renaissance astrology that survived. And another thing I really like about how they do it is they use the Zodiac Man
Yeah.
as the oh
I know it's like doing the
yeah
fade
but another thing is I've been studying
in.
various forms of astrology is really realizing that the tropical signs are named after constellations that they are not long no longer attached to, like the sidereal zodiac is attached to the constellations. And I've been thinking about so what would be better names for the tropical signs?
Yeah.
And what better names than the head, the neck, all dented down to the feet for for Pisces.
Pisces, yeah.
So, because tropically, it's always 0 degrees Aries. And so and they would you say plant in the feet, or plant in the head. Or well not you wouldn't plant in the head.
No, that's a barren sign. Yeah.
you'd
Avoid planting in the head.
or cut
Prune, yeah,
prune in the
exactly.
head.
Sure.
Yeah.
Prune in the head, or weed, or dig a hole, or something destructive and burning. Could
Yeah.
flame weed your carrots in Aries,
Sure.
that'd be excellent.
Oh,
Yeah,
that's
that's a
awesome.
good
That's
idea.
a great idea.
I have a little old lady that works at the grocery store that I go to in Madison County where I live, Miss Wanda. She's amazing. She's one of the only people that's nice to me because I look, I have like all my intense tattoos, and she's so sweet. And she'll be like, she knows I love to garden. And she's like, signs in the arms, did you plant your beans today? And I'm
Oh
like,
my
I don't
gosh,
know.
stop
She's the only person I know who openly speaks about that. And she
Cool.
plants potatoes in the feet in Pisces. So I started doing that at her recommendation. I've heard everybody loves to argue about it,
Yeah.
Some people are like, oh, that'll give you too much potato rot if you plant them in the feet. But Miss Wanda swears by it, and I trust her. So
Yeah.
Might also depend on where you are, like
Yeah.
if you're in a more moist area or if you're in a,
We are for sure. Yeah. We have very moist land.
So what has your experience been with the astrology? Because that takes up a portion of mountain magic too. Did you get most of your information from Foxfire, or do people still in Western North Carolina because do that besides Miss Wanda?
Yeah, they definitely do. They do. And I'm lucky enough to have a studio at our local community center where I live outside of Asheville, at the Laurel Community Center. And so I do get to like hang out with some of the old folks. I really try to be mindful that I'm extremely an outsider in their space and like have moved to their homeland that they've lived at, since their ancestors colonized it in the 1600s. So I'm reminded of that a lot. And I really try to be respectful with how I ask people questions or, mine them for information, if that makes sense. But like people like Wanda, who are just like, oh, you're buying a lot of cans. What are you canning? I'm like, green beans. And then we just get into it. She wants to share and talk. And I've learned mostly from the Foxfire books, from actually a lot of JSTOR articles, from talking to my neighbors. And that's where I get the more like detailed information. But I made a PowerPoint presentation and I teach a class on planting by the signs where I've taken everything I've learned about it and made it kind of more simple. They did have me cut out a lot of that information in my book, which I was sad about. They were like, it's boring. I was like, no, it's
No, that's not boring.
I think it felt redundant, maybe, but I really love it. I love planting by the signs personally. It's kind of cool to see the like 16th or I would say 17th century German gentleman's hobby of like dowsing and cavorting about with these astrological, like cut your hair on a Friday, and it's in the mountains. It's still in 2024.
Wow,
It's pretty
for sure.
that is, yeah.
Yeah,
Interesting.
I do by the signs mostly, and I do by the phase too sometimes, but I privilege the signs to the phases. But is that what you do, or how do you?
Yeah, exactly. And I rarely get it exactly right. I got one of those biodynamic calendars because they're so nice.
Calendula.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. That's such a fun, and I have a farmer's almanac, and so I just look at those. And I'll try to get within the week, We'll see. I haven't got my peas planted yet because I'm late here. We want to plant peas around the end of March. So
Wow.
we'll see. I dreamed last night, though, that I was growing peas and that pears came up on the vine. And I'm really curious what that means. So give me
Oh,
feedback
wow.
for me. Big green pears on the pea plant.
Interesting.
Very
Yeah, they
sweet
were maybe
peas.
you'll have some very sweet peas.
I hope so. I would be really grateful. But this weekend, we're terracing the rest of our hillside with our community. We have a big terraced garden and we're planting all our peas and potatoes this week.
Cool.
So,
That's awesome.
I'm so excited. I love it.
Nice.
Yeah, we
Yeah, we
got
still got a few months.
well, we could we should plant peas and oats here soon.
Oh
Maybe
yeah,
after
I'll
this
definitely.
little winter, we'll get on that.
Yeah, I guess it feels like months because it's blizzarding, but maybe it is quicker.
I can't imagine. It's tough. I'm so excited to come meet y'all and hang out at the conference. I'm so excited. I love the Facebook group y'all have put together. I love that y'all combine scientific herbal knowledge with the occult knowledge. And I've felt kind of alone in that sometimes. And ever since I first saw your work, like 5 years ago, I guess, 4 years ago, I was like, I really want to connect with these people. And 2 months later, you emailed me. And I was like,
Wow, good job. You're a good witch. Or
you guys are.
as Byron would say, actually, when people ask her if she's a good witch, no, I'm an excellent witch.
She's just the best. We just did a
Yeah.
book event not long ago. I haven't seen her in a long time. And I brought her
Oh.
like 45 presents because she's just done, she really
Yeah.
helps other people in the community, and she's been so supportive of me, even though I'm a northern, West Pennsylvania Appalachian and was not raised in like Appalachian culture. She's
She's
been
a
very, I'm an Appalachian citizen, is what I call myself. That's what a name
nice.
she gave me to use, but
Perfect.
yeah, she's amazing. And I really appreciate how much she's supported me. And it's nice to
Oh.
have somebody. I don't have close relationships with my own family, and it's nice to have elders in my community that are safe to talk to. She supported me in like scary health times. I really appreciate what she's, what she
Oh.
brings to our community.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's definitely one of our favorite mentors and
She's
we
very
look up to her
supportive.
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's so
She
supportive. I
is.
think
Yeah.
she's kind of adopted
Totally.
us too, like us under her wing, and it's so sweet.
Yeah, she's irreplaceable for sure.
Yeah, we tried to get her to the conference this year, but she was already booked. I think she's in the UK or something at that time this year, but
Yeah. that sounds precious. Yeah.
That's
Fine. We'll
we'll allow it. So
totally understand.
maybe next year.
But we're really excited to have you.
Yeah, really excited to
Yeah.
have you.
It's
Thank
going
you
to
so
be
much for coming and for
awesome.
speaking. And you're going to do a plant walk too, I
Yeah, I'm
think.
really excited to share my Lamas herb lore class too. I get so excited. I have a really fun booklet too I can bring for everybody. And I just teaching herb lore is like one of the lights in my life and is really what lights me up personally. So I'm so excited to share that.
Yeah, it's going
Awesome.
to be awesome. So if folks haven't gotten their tickets yet, dear listeners, please go to plantcunningconference.com and be sure to join Isaac and I and Rebecca. And we have Pam Montgomery and Seven Song and Zamboni Funk and all sorts of really amazing speakers on the lineup and more to be announced soon. So we're excited.
Yeah. And so what are you excited for coming up besides the conference? What have you got going on?
Yeah, I'm going to go to a couple other special conferences this year, like Medicines from the Earth. And
I think
we're back at Black Mountain this year. I have to double check. We were at UNCA last year, but I love that conference. It's a scientific, you know, herb conference, and I do plant walks at it. I always wanted to be able to teach there. I'm looking forward to that. And looking forward to continuing working on my book projects and seeing my beloved friends and students in my Hedgecraft course and planting my garden, continuing to make Lindera, the community I live at, a fun place for my students and friends to come and experience the beautiful Southern Appalachian mountain forests.
Awesome.
And you are coming out with a book at some point.
2025, and I will let you know. More information. You'll get one in the mail probably before I'm able to tell you about it.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. Thank you.
Of course, my pleasure.
Yay.
Well, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And
we're excited to see you in person. So,
yeah. So excited. Thank y'all so much for your time and your sweet spirits. I always love talking to y'all.
Yeah, thank
Likewise.
You so much.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.